Golf Smarter number 105 for December 18, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Jim Waldron of the Balance Point Golf Schools.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thank you for joining us for another Golf Smarter podcast. Today, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will answer questions about special glasses to help find golf balls and why are there stock golf clubs if everyone should get fitted? We'll also draw the name for the winner of the MacGregor MacTech NVG2 driver. And please stay tuned after Kenny for an announcement about new golf content from SmarterPodcast.com to you. Our guest today is Jim Waldron of the Balance Point Golf Schools and BalancePointGolf.com. Balance Point Golf Schools has been rated as a top 25 golf school by Golf Magazine and has schools all over the world. But there's no better way to describe Jim Waldron's effectiveness as a teacher than with a testimonial and a request from a Golf Smarter listener. This is Al Dischel.
I think Jim Waldron would be a great podcast for you, Fred, because he's just a master of the game. I think he's an unsung hero in the golf world. He has a tremendous understanding of overall golf game, from the mental aspect to full swing, short game. He just has it all.
Welcome, Jim.
Hi, Fred. How's it going?
It's going very well. Thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Great to be here.
Yeah, you know, the Balance Point Golf School. I love the name Balance Point because it says so much about what's missing in people's golf games.
I totally agree. And it has a multidimensional meaning. People often ask me why I called it Balance Point. And I guess the answer is it's a mind-body connection model, so it's a balanced blending of both mental and physical approaches. It's also because in my research over the years, I've discovered that the most important physical fundamental in the golf swing is indeed balance. And it also refers to the fact that as a teacher, I'm trying to avoid what I see to be one of the biggest problems in traditional golf instruction, which is moving from one extreme to the other. So it's almost a Buddhist middle way approach.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that in the history of golf instruction that, you know, the pendulum kind of swings back and forth every decade or so from really extreme positions. The swing has got a lot of lateral weight transfer in the backswing, which is really popular in the mid-80s to maybe early 90s, mainly due to a guy named Jimmy Ballard, who was a famous teacher back then. And now it's swinging back the other way with stack and tilt, where you don't want to transfer any weight at all to your right leg in the backswing. And so you can actually chart that historically back and forth movement. In logic, it's called the fallacy of the extremes. It's rampant in traditional golf instruction. So I tried to avoid that in my teaching.
Yeah, do you think this pendulum will continue to swing back and forth, or are we getting to a point where the science, biomechanics, the electronics to be able to really quantify everything is going to take us in one direction and then take us farther in that direction?
Well, I guess there's two answers. In yes and no.
Thank
yes
you.
In the sense, I don't want to sound like I'm being equivocating, but it's true. I mean, it's yes in the sense from the people who are invested in scientific research and people like myself who are using a science-based approach. It's definitely, we're reaching much more of a consensus about what the biomechanical model is, for example. But in the traditional golf media, the stuff you see for the most part in golf magazines, some of the stuff on the internet, the Golf Channel, it's still more of a traditional approach where you'll see that swinging back and forth.
Are they helping us? The golf magazines, the Golf Channel, I mean, isn't it better to get on the physical side, to get one-on-one instruction to really understand what you're doing?
Yes, it is. That's another problem with the golf media approach. Is almost all of the articles in the magazines and most of the stuff you see on the Golf Channel and other TV golf shows is geared toward a one-size-fits-all approach, and we kind of know that really doesn't work.
But on the mental side, we can be a little more general.
That's true. The the mental side is much more universal in its application to helping average golfers especially improve, much more so than working on the physical. So you're absolutely right.
And it has a significant impact.
Oh, huge. Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, even for beginner golfers, I mean, it's – well, my philosophy, I always tell people, look, it's 100% mental. And that kind of, you know, gets them to kind of take a step backward. What do you mean it's 100% mental? I go, well, it's 100% mental and it's 100% physical. It's both. But it's 100% mental in a way. What I mean by that is even if I'm working on someone's golf swing or their putting stroke or their chipping stroke, and we define that the route we want to take is mainly working on improving the physical technique, that starts with that student having what I call a light bulb or an epiphany or a flash of insight at the conceptual level about what he's trying to get his body motion or club motion to do that's new and better. So even learning how to turn your shoulders better or how to get your club shaft on plane throughout the golf swing better starts with a mental concept in your mind. And then it eventually transfers over to improve body motion.
But are we really able to learn this stuff? And, well, I'm sure we're able to, but do we take advantage of the fact that when we learn this stuff, if we go to a school, once we get onto the golf course, do we really utilize it, or are we just bringing ourselves back to bad habits after the 25th, 30th shot of the round?
When you say it, you're referring to maybe swing changes of some form?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's that phenomena where an average golfer takes a lesson, traditional, what I would call a traditional golf lesson, and in that traditional golf lesson, they're given some specific physical things to think about changing, one or more things, usually more than one, which by itself is a bad idea. And then the golfer struggles to somehow force his body motion to adapt to that new thought or new behavior. And, of course, that doesn't work. It doesn't even work in the driving range, but it especially doesn't work on the golf course. In fact, that using that approach will make you worse, not better.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah. But there's another approach that does involve changing the physical technique to be better that bypasses the inherent problems with the traditional approach. And the approach I created is based on several different models, but probably the most commonly known in terms of average golfer's understanding would be the Asian martial arts model. In the Asian martial arts model, you're taught very specific, concrete physical techniques, you know, blocking techniques, punching techniques, kicking techniques, none of which are natural or innate. There's no natural roundhouse kick that's, you know, embedded in your neural networks or in your genetic code, for example. It's a learned behavior. But when you first learn it, it's completely separate from the act of fighting. So in Asian martial arts, there's been a very, you know, historical, clear separation between learning the technique or learning the mechanics of how to punch, block, and kick versus the art of fighting. And all the learning of the mechanics is done in pieces, a piece-by-piece sequential approach, working on one piece and only one piece at a time. And it's done in slow motion in front of a mirror. And that approach works really well because what you're really doing is you're imprinting that new body motion, that new piece of behavior into your subconscious mind memory bank. So when you go into the art of fighting format, it happens automatically, unconsciously.
I'm with you.
Does it make any sense?
Oh, yeah, it makes a tremendous amount of sense. But what makes me think about are golfers and the level of commitment that they want to give to practice, to change, and to going out and playing.
Yeah, and that brings up the whole point that we talked about in an earlier conversation, which gets to the whole, I think it's the crux of the problem. I mean, it starts with why does the average golfer play golf? And, you know, the way I define it, there's two ways of playing golf. I call them flog and golf. Flog being the word golf spelled backwards, or golf on Superman's Bizarro World, you know, where everything's done the opposite, right? And unfortunately, I think for people who are engaged in playing the game that I refer to as flog, which is certainly the vast majority of golfers in this country and in probably in Japan and Korea, it's different in Ireland and in Scotland and the UK, they're playing golf over there. That is conscious mind golf. Flog is playing the game of golf from a conscious mind. How do I make my swing change mid-swing? How do I obsess about my score? How do I try to force myself to shoot lower scores? there's sort of a neurotic kind of behavior involved with the game of flog. And one of my missions in life is to take people who are floggers and turn them into golfers.
Are people willing to change?
Some are and some aren't, for sure. I mean, you know, I won't take on a new student unless I engage in a somewhere between a 15-minute and 30-minute conversation, usually over the telephone. I ask a series of questions. And if I determine that that person is looking for a way to play better flog and not to learn how to play golf, I will turn down the opportunity to work with that student because basically they're uncoachable.
And do you find that that's the majority of people?
Absolutely. It's the majority.
So what are they looking for when they call you? It's like I'm hooking the ball.
Well, when
I
you
need
say,
to fix
when you say
my
do
slut.
I find it's the majority, what I meant by that is I know it's the majority because I've been involved in golf my whole life, and I know from research I've done and just years of being a student of the game and a teacher that is the majority of golfers. But the majority of golfers don't call me for instruction because they usually hear about me and my approach through word of mouth or through seeing our website. And if they've done either of those two things, they know this is an alternative form of golf instruction. So most of my new students fit the category of people who actually have already hit bottom trying to play flog and have realized they can't do that anymore. It doesn't work. And then there might be a new way to play the game of what I call golf, which is subconscious mind sport, not a conscious mind sport. So they're more open to change.
Okay. Yeah, that makes total sense. And then you just get them from the bottom up, and they're far more receptive to learning.
And
but do you also get people who are just beginners?
Oh, yeah, we get beginners. We don't do a lot of beginners. Beginner golfers tend to take individual one or two individual lessons to start out with, and then they'll play golf for a while and they usually get hooked. And then maybe after a year of playing golf, they'll take a few more lessons. But most of my new students start out with us in a golf school format. And so by definition, they've already been playing golf for several years. So we don't get that many beginners. But the ones we have gotten over the years have gotten just tremendous improvement very, very rapidly because they don't have any bad habits, either mental or physical.
And where do you start with people? Do you start on the mental side? Do you start on the physical side?
Somewhat depends on their handicap level. Part of the interview process is goal setting, and we determine based on the questions I ask and the answers that are given by the student. It's kind of a meeting of the minds. We kind of both sit down together and try to determine what would be the best place to start. But in general, I can give you kind of a rough outline.
Please.
If they're shooting 90 or higher, it's almost always primarily, if not exclusively, on the physical side. Because even if I gave them, say, a one-day golf school on the mental or several hours of private instruction on the mental side, it's going to help for sure, but it's not going to help as much as working on the physical. Because the reason someone who can't break 90, let's say they're shooting 105 as their average score, they're making a lot of just basic mistakes due to poor body motion, which creates poor club motion, which creates poor impact, which creates the bad ball flight result. So you really got to get them to learn better physical technique. When they're shooting between about 75 and 89 in that area, I'd say it's half and half. It's more 50% mental, 50% physical. And when they're shooting 74 or below, it's mostly mental. That's kind of how we break it down.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's always mental in the sense that the way we teach, since the mind-body connection model, which is science has proven to be true, dictates that all body motion is caused by subconscious mind mental pictures, so to speak, or concepts. If your mental pictures are off, then you're wasting your time trying to train the body directly. You've got to train the mind first before you train the body. And then the training of the body is much, much more effective.
Do you find that people are a bit frustrated when you start working on the mental part before you put a club in their hand, or is that what happens?
No, actually, I don't. I think people are very amenable to it. I mean, I think people at this point, we are in the 21st century now. I think when you explain to people, look, I had a student the other day, it was a brand new student, and I explained the mind-body connection model. He goes, well, I've heard about that before, but I'm not exactly sure what it means. I said, well, I'll give you a real concrete example. I said, if I could do this, if I was the most advanced neurosurgeon on the planet, right, with technology that's maybe 50 years into the future, but if I had that technology now, and I screwed off the top half of your skull cavity, took out your brain, and put Tiger Woods' brain in your skull cavity, hook it up to your central nervous system, you hit it pretty much like Tiger. And that always astounds people because people think it's in your muscles because the term muscle memory is a myth. I mean, the golf swing originates in your brain. and it's basically a biochemical imprint in your brain that is sent via your central nervous system to your muscles and joints. And that's so what that person would do is he would instantly start to swing very much like Tiger, you know, giving some obviously difference in terms of physical fitness, height, flexibility, and so forth. But if the person was roughly the same body type of Tiger and reasonably flexible, he would hit it pretty darn well, almost as well as Tiger hits it.
You don't know how many people right now heard just a little bit of that and rewound this whole section to, to go, wait a minute, this guy's going to take my brain out and put in Tigers? I am going to sign up for his school right now.
but the point is, Tiger Woods, his subconscious mind and his brain, right? Not the conscious mind, not the part that can, quote-unquote, think lovely swing thoughts. It's not about swing thoughts. It's about deeply held, subconscious mind-held beliefs and concepts and mental images about the golf swing. He's got mental images and beliefs about the golf swing that are in accordance with the scientific research on the golf swing. In other words, there's been scientific research the last 40 years that have proven to be what the actual laws are. They're actual laws of physics, geometry, biomechanics that govern a good golf swing. His mental pictures are in harmony with that research, and the average person's mental pictures are opposite of the research.
And how do we get there?
And that's the job of a teacher. The teacher's job is to show the student, you know, number one, what the laws are, what the research shows to be true. And we have people come through our golf school, and they've never heard of this stuff before. They've never heard about forward shaft lean during impact, for example, which is a really huge law of golf. I mean, there's only one shot, which is a specialty shot in the short game, a flop shot, with super high trajectory lob wedge shot, where that law does not apply. Every other shot in golf except that, all putts, all chips, all other short game shots, and certainly all full swing shots, you must have the handle end of the golf club leading the club head end just before, during, and shortly after impact. If you don't have that handle end leading, it's not a good shot.
Okay, now paint me stupid here. I'm going to back you up.
Uh-huh.
I'm one of those people.
Uh-huh.
What are you talking about?
Well, again, we're obviously having a phone conversation. It's better to show you this in a visual way, but
okay.
Imagine that you're holding a golf club at ground level, perpendicular to the ground, right? So it's at 90 degrees to the ground.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to grab my golf club.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
And if you imagine there's a golf ball down there next to the club face, right? The average golfer believes, for all kinds of reasons, which are sort of hard to explain in words, but I'll do my best, that impact with that golf club is with the club shaft at a 90-degree angle to the ground. That's what most people believe. Anybody who's about probably a 12 handicap or higher certainly believes that to be true.
Okay.
It's not true. It's a false concept. If you look at any tour pro that photograph at impact, with everything except a lob shot, there is some degree, it might be a half inch or even a quarter inch on a putt, and it might be 10 inches on a sand wedge, a full sand wedge. There is some degree of forward shaft lean, meaning the handle end is leading toward the target.
Okay. Is this the swing the handle thing?
No, swing the handle, that's just Eddie Mearns, who was a great teacher. His concept of, just a general kind of a general theory about how to swing a golf club. But it's certainly part of that.
Okay.
Certainly Eddie Mearns, swing the handle, knows this. And in his book and his videos, he talks about this.
Yeah, I've tried to get him on the show.
Yeah.
It's not been easy. Yeah,
but he's not the only one. Trust me, every golf professional out there pretty much knows this.
Right.
Every tour player knows it. But almost no average golfers know about it. And it's just always astounding to me that it's not more commonly talked about in the traditional golf media.
I'm listening. I'm okay. So now where are we going with this? So now we have this total misconception of where our hand is basically what you're telling me is where our hands are at impact.
Right, hands and handle of the club must be leading. Now the average impulse is especially for the higher handicap golfers, someone in about I'd say 18 handicap or higher range. Every natural impulse they have, not just the conscious mind, because we can quickly get someone's conscious mind to change understanding by showing photographs of tour players, you know, throughout the swing or especially at impact. Everybody will go, I can clearly see that club shaft's leaning forward, way forward, especially in the short irons, like, you know, 8 to 10 inches forward. It's a lot. No one disputes that. You can show that. You can prove that to anybody in 5 minutes who has an open mind. The problem is their subconscious still believes that the club shaft has to be vertical or even leaning backwards, particularly on the short irons and wedges. Most people think you have to scoop the ball up in the air. You hear this a lot when you're a golf teacher. Well, I don't like to hit my driver in the fairway. I actually like it to end up in the first cut of rough. And I'll go, well, why is that? And they'll say, well, because then the ball's sitting up on the grass, I can more easily get the club in underneath the ball. Now, every good player knows that's a much harder shot if the ball's sitting up in the rough and if the ball's sitting down on the fairway.
Mm-hmm.
Because every good player knows you have to hit down on the ball. Hitting down the ball is another way of saying you have to have forward shaft lean.
Right.
And I'll tell this person, this prototypical average golfer, no, you should never try, except in that super high trajectory lob shot I mentioned earlier, every other shot in golf, you should hit down on it. You don't want to be hitting up on it, ever.
You want to hit ball, then ground, not
exactly.
Ground, then ball.
Exactly. And most shots, not all, but most clubs, the club head's making a fairly steep descending blow into the back of the ball. Certainly from six iron through lob wedge, it's making a descending blow to the extent that your divot's going to start in front of the ball, in front of the target side of the ball, and it's going to be about 6 to 8 inches long if for those clubs, and about a quarter inch to half inch deep, and the deepest point of the divot will be 3 to 4 inches in front of the target side of the ball. If you aren't taking a divot like that from six iron through lob wedge, you're not hitting it properly.
Hmm.
You're not striking it the way those clubs are meant to be struck. So a lot of what I do is help people understand what these laws are and why they have trouble getting their body to adhere to these laws. And that's because there are actual, besides common misperceptions, which this being one, there's actual optical illusions that make people see things when they watch Tiger Woods swing or Annika Soringstam swing that literally are not happening. So when you watch a good player swing at normal speed without breaking it down to slow motion video or still photos, a lot of what the average golfer sees happening in terms of club motion and body motion literally is not happening. There are actual optical illusions in the golf swing. There's 28 illusions I've identified in my research. 20 are optical, 5 are feel-based, and 3 have to do with how your mind senses time flowing, you should say, in your golf swing. So how your subjective sense of time is being perceived is 3 of them. And they have a tremendously destructive influence on your golf swing when those illusions are operative in your subconscious mind. So I always tell people, you've just come to the most disillusioning golf school on the planet. And I mean that in a positive way, dis-illusioning, because we're trying to root out those illusions.
Okay. And, oh, wow. Overload.
Good.
And, yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. And now you have all this information that you're trying to give. You really do need to attend a school to get this stuff. You're not going to get this on a lesson or two, are you?
Well, you know, you can certainly get some of it. I mean, obviously,
sure.
I can't show you all the 28 illusions in an hour lesson, but I mean, I my minimum with a new student, if they want to learn work on their golf swing, is 4 hours. I won't do it for less than 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, look, I can't show you the entire balance point swing model. I can't show you all the illusions, and I can't demonstrate all the common misperceptions that you're likely to have in 4 hours, but we do a kind of a condensed version of it. But You don't need to learn all of it. Even if you learn one of them, for example, if you or any of your listeners could just master the art of having a forward leaning club shaft, that alone will take someone shooting 105 and get them down in the mid 80s in terms of scoring. Just that one thing. That's how important it is.
And for those people who want balancepointgolf.com, I just let you plug that one in. People are going to go right to it right now. Balancepointgolf.com. To find out more from Jim, but we're not done. Let's talk about the emotional state a bit, because it's so hard to really, in this kind of conversation, to get into the physical and mechanical aspects of it.
I agree.
But thanks for giving it your gold college try. Let's talk about emotional state control and how destructive it is to so many people's game.
Mm-hmm. It's a big one. I would put the mental focus even more important for average golfers, but since you asked about the emotional, we'll talk about that first.
Okay.
The emotional part has to do with, you know, things like expectations. Having any at all is not a good idea in my experience. I mean, if you can learn to play golf with no expectations, that's one of the fastest ways to enter the zone of peak performance.
Hmm.
Of all the ways there are to get into the zone, there's many on the mental and emotional side. The biggest one, the fastest one, and probably the most powerful way to stay in the zone once you enter it, is what I like to call positive indifference. And it basically means to be detached, to learn to detach oneself emotionally, especially from the outcome of your golf shot before you hit it, and to be detached from what kind of score you're going to shoot that day. And if you can do that, it results in tremendous improvement, even for beginner golfers, if they can learn to have that sort of attitude. I always tell my students, look, care a lot off the golf course. Care when you're home writing out your game improvement plan, or, you know, reading a book or watching a video. That's when you want to care. But you don't have the luxury of caring too much once you step onto the first tee. The more you care, the more self-esteem you invest in the outcome of your golf shot and in your score, the more you're going to get in your own way, the more you're likely to flinch and actually interrupt that flow of communication from your brain to your muscles and create a bad shot. So that's the fastest way to improve, I think, overall. If I had to pick one thing of all the stuff we teach, is to help our students learn how not to care so much, to keep themselves separate from the outcome.
But that has nothing to do with picking a target for yourself. Or setting goals for yourself.
When you talk about you mean goal setting in terms of how to improve your score or how to improve your swing, or
I'm even talking about on your shot picking a target. I mean, and having expectations of getting to that target.
That's a great question, isn't it? That's such a good question. I can't even tell you how awesome that is, because
thank you.
It's such a paradox. And in my, you know, I'll be honest. Until about 5 years ago, I was sort of a golf target fundamentalist. In the negative sense. I mean, I taught for years that the only thing you should focus your mind on when you play golf is the target. But I kept getting responses from my students that didn't work for them. Some of them did. A majority, 80%, got tremendous results by focusing on a target. The problem is 20% didn't. And finally, I had to take stock and look back and think to myself, you know, these 20%, it's not working. So why is target not working for 20%? 80% it is. And I found out that part of the reason why for 20% of target doesn't work is they couldn't separate themselves. If I was saying focus on the ball going to a target mentally, these 20% were unable to emotionally detach themselves from the possibility of failure. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're focusing on a target, there's also that increases your sense that there's the possibility of failure. So what I do is part of our research, or rather part of our training with new students, is to help them understand which of those two focal points for your mind works better, a target focal point or a non-target focal point. And you really need to know which is better for you in order to play good golf. But even for the people who are focusing on the target and getting good results, there's still that tendency to kind of get in your own way by caring too much, by having too much emotion invested in it.
Sure.
So we train people in some techniques we developed from NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and also from the Stanislavski method acting technique, how to calm down and kind of play from a more detached state, kind of like how Mr. Spock is in Star Trek, you know, the Vulcan. The warp drive is about to explode, Captain. Fascinating. Versus Dr. McCoy, you know, who's very emotional. That less emotional approach pays huge dividends in golf. And I'm not saying it's easy to do. It's not an easy way. It's not something you can learn overnight. Certainly not a quick fix. But I think it is the fastest way to get better. There was a great interview on the Golf Channel about 12 years ago with Brad Faxon and his mental game coach, Dr. Bob Rutella, who's, I think, probably the number one mental game coach in golf, has been for about the past 25 years. He works with a lot of players on the men's tours, on the women's tour, on the Champions Tour, and with college-level tournament golfers.
I've had so many listeners write to me trying to...
You should get him on.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, that's not an easy task.
No, I know. He's very busy, but he's very good.
And we're just a little podcast over
exactly.
The corner.
But anyhow, the interviewer asked, this is when Faxon had been for several years the number one putter in the world, what are you working on in your putting? And so Brad and Bob started laughing, and they said, your viewers wouldn't believe us if we told you. And so the interviewer said, well, tell us. You're working on your putter face angle control, or your putter club head path, or your setup, or your stroke mechanics. And they kept on laughing. They said, none of those things. And Faxon said, I haven't worked on my putting mechanics since college. So he said, well, what are you working? He goes, here's what it is. He goes, I work on the art of not caring over the putt.
Wow.
The more I not care about the result of the putt, whether it goes in or whether it fails to go in, the better I putt and the more putts I make. And it's an awesome, awesome way to improve your golf game. Because, you know, what happens is when you care too much, especially in a very emotional way, not just a mental way, when your emotions care too much, and you're going to really feel bad about yourself as a person if you quote-unquote fail to make the putt or fail to hit the green with your second shot. The anticipation of failure, of the possibility of failure, causes a breakdown between your brain and your body, a breakdown in communication. And that we call that a brain glitch, right? So when you experience a brain glitch or a loss of mental focus or a loss of emotional focus, and these things can happen in fractions of a second, what manifests in your body motion is a sudden spasm in one or more muscle groups, i.e. a flinch. And the flinch disrupts your body motion, which disrupts your club motion, which hurts your impact, which hurts your ball flight result. So what we do is try to help people learn how to flinch-proof their golf swing, their putting stroke, their short game strokes, by learning how not to care so much.
You've given us a tremendous amount to absorb, and it's been amazingly valuable. I'm going to try to stop thinking about the ball after it stops rolling, right? It's like, okay, saw the shot, didn't do what I wanted to, but let it go. It's not rolling anymore. Let's move on to it, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Jim Waldron of the Balance Point Golf School, and again, it's balancepointgolf.com. And I love this line. It's not your father's golf school. It's very different, but it's quite advanced and incredibly valuable. If you listen to Al Dietschel, who's one of our listeners who started the show here and has been, he says you're an unsung hero.
Well, thanks. Thank you, Al.
And thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Fred.
It's time to ask Kenny. Do you need informed answers about specific golf gear or have questions about what to look for when buying new golf products, especially this time of year? Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist at EdwinWattsGolf.com, is here to help. To submit your question, please go to GolfSmarterPodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. If we use your question on the show, we'll send you a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and EdwinWattsGolf.com, America's Golf Club. Hi, Kenny.
Hey, Fred. Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Fine. How's the holiday season treating Edwin Watts Golf these days?
Very busy, which is a good thing. Well, I'm in a little chilly here in Florida.
Oh, really? What does a little chilly in Florida mean this time of year? Because it's pouring here right now.
Last few days, it's been about 30 degrees in the morning, warming up to about 55. So
That's pretty cold for you guys, huh?
It's you're chilly right for us, yeah. We're not used to that.
No. And, of course, there are people who are mumbling under their breath while they listen to this going, 30 in the morning, and then it goes up? Are you kidding? I'd love to get to 30. But for some reason, they keep listening about golf, even though they can't play. And, you know, folks, we really do appreciate it. You can't believe how much we appreciate that. Even though you can't play golf, you like to hear us babble about it. So, Kenny, we have some questions that I want to go over with you this morning, if you can spare some time from your sales duties.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Alan Johnston of Prenton, Merseyside, UK, says that he has a difficulty with his eyesight, particularly contrast vision, and without his playing partners, he's often unable to find a ball, even in light rough, and sometimes on the fairway. Oh, man, that sucks. Is there a product that you might be able to recommend that could help him? It may be special glasses or some sort of golf ball detector. He doesn't really care. He just doesn't want to waste money on something that might be bogus.
Yeah, it's a good question. And even though it's a product that we don't carry here, I think it's important to kind of touch on it real quick because there's probably several people in the same situation that he is in. And they do sell a product called the golf ball finding glasses. It looks like a regular pair of sunglasses, and they use a special lens that definitely highlights the golf ball, whether it be in the fairway or in the woods. So for him, there is an answer.
That's great. And isn't there a product that has like this little radar chip in a ball that you have this handheld thing that'll beep, 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 and help you find your ball?
There is, but, you know.
You're trying to avoid again, the bogus things,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, not exactly. I mean, for some, it's a great thing, but you're restricted to what kind of golf ball you can use as well, too.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, there has to be a little chip in there somewhere to be able to pick it up. So,
yeah,
you know, a lot of people aren't going to want to play that particular golf ball.
and they won't want to play it over and over and over again. Even though you may be able to find it, who knows where you're going to find it.
Right. And you know, I don't, obviously if somebody hits it in a lake and it's got that little bit extra thing to it, they might be going after it a little bit more than they would another golf ball.
So not only you have to bring this little radar detector, you have to
bring
your
a snorkel and some fins.
Exactly what I was thinking. All right. Well, hopefully, Alan, that's going to help you out. And of course, you can contact Kenny about that, except they don't carry it. So,
but I could possibly get them for them. That doesn't mean that I can't get them just because they can't find them. If they contact me, I can definitely see what I can do about getting them for them.
Well, that's very nice of you. Good for you, Kenny.
I'm all about customer service, Fred.
Yes, you have definitely proven that time and again, and we appreciate that. All right, this question comes from the city of Olathe, Kansas, and I'm taking my time because I don't want to screw up this guy's last name because it's not pronounced the way it's spelled, but it is pronounced Bogey. How's that for a great one? This is from Kyle Bogey.
That's rough.
Well, that's because he hits in the rough. That's never mind. So he was wondering about clubs for his 14-year-old son. He's hit my son's curse with our last name, but he isn't too bad a golfer for 14 years old. He shoots in the mid-80s and the low 90s and plays on pretty good courses, except he has some cheap clubs, and his friends have easily spent upwards of $2,000 on golf clubs. So now we've got the worrying about the Joneses on the golf course, and his question is about new clubs, if it would help his son's game at the age of 14. He loves to play golf, shows no signs of slowing down, and he listens to the Golf Smarter podcast.
He's definitely at the age where, you know, he makes a point in there that he loves the game. There's no sign of slowing down, that he does need to get into a better set of golf clubs. Now, obviously, you don't need to go out and spend $2,000 if money is – I mean, money's an object, obviously, for everybody, especially right now around the holidays. But there's a lot of brands out there that we can get him in for significantly less than that. But I think it's important, you know, that he's at the age where he's wanting to get better at the game, and in order to get better, technology has changed, and certain manufacturers make better products than others. That's a fact. So it would be nice for him to get fitted, you know, with his height and wrist to floor measurements. Let's find out what kind of golf clubs he needs to get size wise, and we can definitely get him into something that he's going to enjoy for quite a long time.
And at 14, he's too old for the U.S. Kids Club, correct?
He is, yes.
He needs most likely adult clubs at this point.
He does, yeah. He absolutely needs to get some adult clubs. And he has the potential to be real good. The scores that he's shooting now, and he hasn't been playing long, so he has a bright future. So it's time to come off the pocketbook a little bit and get him into a real good set of golf clubs, and let's see where he can take it from there.
And you can negotiate with him. I mean, you could tell him that you get a job, you pay for your clubs, and I'll pay for college. Or I'll buy you clubs and you pay for your own college.
There you go.
So you can always negotiate. You can always negotiate with your kids. You won't always win, but you can negotiate with them. What am I talking about? It didn't work for me. But Kenny, do you mind? Can we send two hats to Kyle, one to Kyle and one to his son?
Oh, absolutely. That'd be great.
Awesome. All right, then that's what we'll do. All right, our last question before we get on to other business. This one comes from Milton DeLita in Visalia, California. And he says, if it's best to get fitted and order new clubs, why then are there non-fitted or stock clubs for sale? Isn't it a waste of resources to build and sell stock clubs to those who are either just starting out or don't know any better? Before I knew about getting fitted, I just assumed that people would just buy a set of clubs and start practicing and adjusting with that equipment that they had. He makes a good point.
He does make a good point, but at the same time, you got to look at the overall population of golf. We talk about getting fitted a lot, which is very important, but at the same time, you know, there's a wide range of people that can play stock golf clubs. You know, I would say anywhere from 5'7", 5'8", all the way to 6'1". You know, depending on height and wrist to floor measurement, the majority of the people fit in a standard set of golf clubs. So that's why most people have stock golf clubs readily available for you to choose. A lot of people don't have the time to go get fitted. That's another problem. If you do have the time, you'd be surprised how many people just fall straight into standard. One of the things about getting fitted, you know, we're looking at flex there as much as anything else. Lie angles are important, but for the most part, that doesn't deviate that much. But flex is the most important characteristic when you're getting fitted. We want to make sure you're in a regular flex if you need to be, or you're in a stiff flex if you need to be, or seniors or ladies for that matter. So that's what we talk about in getting fitted. You know, if you're vertically challenged or you're taller than the normal person, then obviously we need to look at changing the lie angle and possibly the length on the golf club. So it's a very good question, but for the majority of the golfers out there, they're going to fit in a standard, and we just need to get the flex correct.
Kenny?
Yes, sir?
Were you being politically correct or trying to be funny when you said vertically challenged?
I was being politically correct. Did it not come out correct?
It was very funny. Okay, now we got... All right, good answer. You just kind of like slid it in there as if you were, oh, I say this all the time, yes. Oh, hey, Shorty. Oh, sorry, Mr. Vertically Challenged.
definitely politically correct.
No, what a good guy you are. Hey, listen, it's time to give something away. We've been talking for the last couple of weeks about this MacGregor MacTech NVG2 driver that we're going to give away. And so if you've been fitted, this is great because you'll get to then select the exact right driver for you that is the MacGregor MacTech because they have variations, correct?
That is correct.
Awesome. All right, and we have received 200 entries today. Over the last couple weeks, and you get to select a winner, and between 1 and 200, you can pick 1, you can pick 200. I sorted them randomly. I'm not going to tell you how I did it. It's a total random sort, and you are going to pick number?
I'm going to go dead in the middle, 100.
Dead in the middle, and that goes to Dallas, Texas. Congratulations to Dylan Cave of Dallas, Texas. He is now the winner of a MacGregor MacTech NVG2 driver.
And congratulations. Probably,
yeah, and because he's in Dallas.
I'm sure he shops at Evan Watts.
Yeah, and he can go start playing with it immediately. He's not going to have to worry about the weather on that one. Congratulations, Dylan. You're going to have a lot of fun with that. Now, we've got an interesting situation here. We're going to do another giveaway, but I think we'll do it over a two-week period. But you are not going to be joining us next week, because you've had your Christmas rush. You're going to take the Christmas day off, because we usually publish on Tuesdays, and Tuesday is Christmas Day, and Tuesday is New Year's Day. So I think you'll come back here, and we'll do our next giveaway on January 2nd. What are you going to give away next, Kenny?
I want to go to the putter line for the giveaway. Guillen Rice.
Guillen? It's pronounced Guillen?
It's pronounced Guillen, spelled...
Guerin.
There you go. You're exactly correct. That's G-U-E. Let me make sure I got
G-U,
the spelling right.
I've looked it up, and it's
G-U-E-R-I-N.
Rife is another word, R-I-F-E, putter, but it's pronounced Guillen Rife.
That is correct. It's a retail value is around 200. The
wow.
Technology on the putter is unbelievable. They left no stone unturned when they were doing their research and development. So somebody will be getting a very nice putter.
Awesome. Well, to enter to win the Guillen Rife putter that will be given away on January 2nd, 2008, go to GolfSmarterPodcast.com and click on the word contest just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. Once you're there, fill out your shipping information and the verification code and click submit. And if you have any questions for me, you can go ahead and write it in there or click on the Hey Fred button. And if you have any questions for Kenny that you'd like answered, and we can send you a hat if we use your question, click on the Ask Kenny button. Kenny, interesting, we got an email. I haven't told you about this one yet. Got an email from a listener who's a regular listener to not only Golf Smarter, but to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. And he noticed, you know, on the last two episodes we had on the shafts with Rob Schickner, very interesting conversation about shafts. He said, I just finished listening, and this is from Paul Tarvidas. And he says, I just finished listening to all of the Golf Better podcasts. I was aggrieved to learn that you gave out prizes and that I had missed all of the deadlines, except maybe for the last podcast. You gave away related prizes for podcasts 1 through 7, but there was no swag for number 8 or 9. Then I noticed the paradox. You gave us the shaft by not giving us a shaft.
That's pretty witty.
That's pretty good. Good job, Paul. But you still don't win anything. Okay. I think it takes care of all the business for now. Kenny, I'm not going to be able to talk to you, but have a very Merry Christmas to you and the girls and everybody over there at Edwin Watts Golf. Thanks again for your continued support, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Have a Merry Christmas, buddy.
Same to you and everybody else out there, Fred. Thank you very much.
And thanks again to Al Diesel for the request and to Jim Waldron and the Balance Point Golf School. Again, you can find more at balancepointgolf.com. Next week on Golf Smarter, Kenny won't be here, but I received another request from a listener asking us to look at caddytips.com. We'll have a conversation with the principals of the company, Ben McAllister and Darian Shingu. Now, there's a couple of announcements that I'd like to make. First, we have launched the Golf Smarter blog at golfsmarterpodcast.com. The Golf Smarter blog is going to be your direct contact with all of the golf programming that we provide at smarterpodcasts.com. Our blog entries will discuss each show's content, including who the guest is, at least one great tip they provide, links to their website, what questions Kenny is going to answer, the weekly quote, and a direct link to play the full podcast right there on the Golf Smarter blog page. This new podcast player allows you to pause, skip forward or backward, and a timer to tell you where you are in the show. But the most exciting part of the blog is that it allows you to log in and comment on every episode. Now, in the past, if you had a comment on the show, you'd email me and we'd have a back and forth communication. But now, when you log in and post your comments in the Golf Smarter blog, you can have a dialogue with other listeners to discuss your thoughts, favorite courses, strategies, our guests, or whatever you'd like. Please check it out and let me know what you think. Of course, I'm still receiving email when you click on the Hey Fred button as well. A frequent request that I also receive is that you'd like more frequent episodes of Golf Smarter. And that brings us to our next exciting announcement. Introducing Golf Smarter Tips. Golf Smarter will still be an in-depth interview each week covering a wide array of golf topics. Golf Smarter Tips will be treated more like an ongoing golf school. And each episode will provide you with one tip and be only about 5 minutes long. We're starting with two instructors each week, and our goal is to provide five teachers each week covering five different topics. We start with Michael Anthony on getting and staying in the mental zone and Kirk Jones on detailed swing mechanics. Our goal is obvious. We want you to be a smarter golfer and achieve lower scores through our ongoing lessons. Your free subscription to Golf Smarter Tips is available at golfsmartertips.com. When you're there, click on the subscribe via iTunes button. That will take you right to the Golf Smarter Tips page in iTunes. Once there, click on subscribe. This will ensure that you will get every single episode. And as we add teachers, you won't miss a single lesson. Of course, you can always listen to each program right on our website. And there's also a link to the Golf Smarter blog on the page as well, where you can listen there. I've been working on this for nearly a year, and I believe this is going to fulfill many of your requests for more concentrated, deeper content. So please check it out right now and let me know what you think. Just to let you know, the first couple of episodes with our teachers will be an introduction and an overview of the lessons. And on December 31st, class is in session. We close with this week's appropriate quote, which comes out of Matthew Adams' book, Fairways of Life. And it's by Tiger Woods, who said, "You never get to where you want to be. That's the beautiful thing about this game, because tomorrow can always be better." If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com. Hi, this is Fred Green inviting you to join us for the Golf Smarter Tips Podcast. Each week, we'll feature numerous short, easy-to-understand lessons that will improve your game and lower your scores.
Hi, this is Kirk Jones. Join me weekly on Golf Smarter Tips Podcast. Each week, I'll give you tips and advice that will make your swing modernized and simplified.
Give us a few minutes of your time, and we'll help you to become a better golfer. The Golf Smarter Tips Podcast is free on iTunes or at golfsmartertips.com.